morning, we were sitting up there talking to the leader from Mosaic Elect, and we were talking with him and his crew, and they had made a couple decisions as a community to stop putting effort into some of these outside initiatives. And we were asking him why. It started to look like Mosaic was just kind of becoming a typical church in our view. We were challenging them, like, why would you do this? And he wouldn't give us a straight answer. He said to us, I'll tell you a story. It's a riddle. And the reason why I stopped doing these initiatives as a community is the same reason as the answer to this riddle. And he told us this riddle, and the riddle goes something like this. I don't know why I can still remember it. He said, a farmer had a whole lot of grain that they needed to take to sell in a village. And the farmer also had a sheep and a fox. And the farmer needed to get that grain to sell to the village, and on their way they came to a bridge. And they found that the only way across that bridge was to carry one thing over at a time. And the problem the farmer realized is that if he left the sheep with the grain, the sheep would eat the grain. And if he left the fox with the sheep, well, the fox would eat the sheep. How did the farmer get all things across to the village to sell his grain? Now, we sat there on this rooftop wrestling with what the heck that riddle was. I am terrible at riddles. Phil or Tim would always come upstairs or whatever and throw a riddle at me, and I'd be like, I had no clue. And so we sat there and we talked about it for ages. We were going back and forth, back and forth. He wouldn't tell us the answer. You could see that he had done this before because his crew was laughing. They had heard the riddle, right? And they were like, oh yeah. And for some reason, he told us the answer right at the end. And it wasn't particularly insightful in this case, but that story is burnt into my mind. Something happened with that riddle. I know you're going to be thinking about the riddle the whole time. I'm not going to tell you the answer. We can talk about it later if you want. The point of it was this. Stories do something to us. They engage us. I found myself getting pulled in. I was like visualizing what it would be like to be this farmer. I was trying to like work it out. And it does something to our minds, right? Like we engage with something differently when it's in the form of story. Story has this power. And why is that? Why does story draw us in? Why does it engage us in a way that other forms don't? We're going to get to that a little bit more tonight. But we in Mosaic have this big theory, this big belief, which is that the stories we tell shape us. That stories that we fuel ourselves with, they kind of lay waste to reality around us and will form a new reality. Whatever it is, those stories will cause us to see the world differently. They shape our imagination, what's possible. The stories that we believe and repeat to one another, they matter. They have a profound impact on each other. And so what we wanted to do in this series was take some time out and hear the stories of Jesus. To let Jesus tell us stories. And then see how they impact our world. How they shape our world. Because our stories shape us. And so to do that, I'm gonna just step through, hopefully, like three high-level challenging questions. Which I'm totally not qualified to do. But I'm just one beggar showing you the bread I've received, right? That's what we do on the stool. And so what I want to give you is why Jesus spoke in parables, at least a little bit insight there, what the heck a parable is, and then how we engage with them, how we wrestle with parables. So Jesus, it'd be good if I kept my Bible on me. Jesus is pretty famous for telling stories, and it's actually one thing that I really love about Jesus. You kind of find him doing this in all sorts of cases with all sorts of people. But the first one in Matthew's account that he tells is a famous parable of the sower. I'm sure you guys have heard it in Sunday school at some time. Matthew 13. Actually, we're going to... And he is telling the story of the parable. I'm actually not going to tell you the story of the sower because we're going to do that in a couple weeks. But after he has told the story... his disciples come up to him and ask for an explanation. He's like, why are you talking like this? And I'll just read it. I'll pick up there. So this is after Jesus talked about the seeds and the soil and all the different responses. The disciples came up and asked, why do you tell stories? He replied, you've been given insight into God's kingdom. You know how it works. Not everybody has this gift, this insight. It hasn't been given to them. Whenever someone has a heart ready for this, the insights and understandings flow freely. But if there is no readiness, any trace of receptivity soon disappears. That's why I tell stories, to create readiness, to nudge the people towards receptive insight. In their present state, they can stare till doomsday and not see it. Listen till they're blue in the face and not get it. I don't want Isaiah's forecast repeated all over again. Your ears are open, but you do not hear a thing. Your eyes are awake, but you don't see a thing. The people are blockheads. They stick their fingers in their ears so they won't have to listen. They screw their eyes shut so they won't have to look, so they won't have to deal with me face to face, and let me heal them. Eugene's actually quite nice in this translation. As I've been prepping, I was reading NIV. And in the traditional translation, right, it's got that language that's really famous, that Jesus is famous for those who have ears but do not hear, for they have eyes who do not see. And the language is quite provocative, because if you read the initial translations, it almost sounds like Jesus doesn't want people to get it. In that first pass, you'll read it, and it's like, those who have will get more. Those who have less will have it all taken away. And it's this real kind of confronting language. And when I read it, I'm like, why is Jesus talking like this? What is he trying to get at? And so when we wrestle with why Jesus was telling stories, I think we have to start with the fact that Jesus was stepping into a Jewish tradition. He was stepping into a Jewish tradition of playing the role of a prophet. Now, when we started off tonight, I had Peter read for us the account of David and Nathan. And Nathan, a prophet in Israel, was coming up and confronting David after David had Bathsheba's husband, Uriah, killed. Jesus is actually quoting here from Isaiah, right? Isaiah, another Jewish prophet, who weaves parables in his account as he works with the people of Israel. And there's something really beautiful. I don't know, until I've been a parent, I don't think I've wrestled with prophets like I do now. So you get this question, like, why would the prophets say something like this? Like, so you'll never, your hearts are so callous, you won't get it. Why, you know, like, they have this real harsh language. But prophets are famous for, like, setting the consequences. Like to me, I almost hear them as parents. They're like, hey, if you keep doing that, what's going to happen is you're going to fall, you're going to hit your head, we're going to have to go to the doctor, right? And the parents say that not just so they can hear themselves think, although sometimes we do, let's be honest. Like, we just say it for our own sake. But they say it in hopes that their kids would stop, right, and change course. The prophets are masterful at this. Like, they're trying to find a way to get people to hear, to get them to listen, so that they would turn or they would change, they would go a different way. Jesus is stepping into a tradition where there was prophets, people gifted and given this permission to speak into society, to ask people to consider life again differently. One of the authors that I've been reading a little bit, he's got a great name to quote, Klein Snodgrass. I don't know where he's from, but Snodgrass is amazing. He says this about a parable. He says, a parable's ultimate aim is to awaken insight, to stimulate the conscious, and move to action. The primary reason Jesus' parables are stories with intent is that they are prophetic instruments. The tool especially of those who have a message from God. They are prophetic instruments. Jesus says these words not so that there's like an in-group and an out-group. He's not trying to conceal a message kind of hidden or woven in a story so only some people get it. What Jesus is trying to do is wake up the generation that he was speaking to. He was playing the role of a prophet, using stories to get inside and hopefully wake them up to action, to live life some way differently. Now, that doesn't mean prophets are always like trying to guilt people. It was trying to, wherever they are, wherever he was meeting people, to get them to see it in his eyes, to see it in light of who God is. Jesus was trying to recast that whole vision. And so he steps into the prophetic tradition to tell stories to shape people. So when we talk about why Jesus told stories, I argue that he told stories to shape people. There was a book that came out not too long ago, and it was about why ideas spread. And when I first read an article about it, I have to admit I was like a little bit nervous, because the quote in the article is that stories are like Trojan horses. And this guy did all this analysis for marketing, right? And he was saying that stories do something different to humanity. They somehow get past the defenses, like the Trojan horse story, right? And then all of a sudden they can get you to look and see something differently that you didn't want to see. The power of stories. And Jesus and the prophets, I think they knew this. I think they were queued up on the fact that we take information that we're given and we immediately try to assess it and hang it off of categories that will result in us not having to change. I do this all the time, right? Someone presents some information to me. I will find just enough flaw in it that I can then put it in the don't have to do anything basket, right? I would say I am often guilty of having a bias towards inaction. And so how do you speak to a generation, to a people like us, who are saturated by people trying to get us to do something differently? We're marketed to all the time, right? Everyone's trying to sell us stuff, and we have defenses that we put up to survive that, to kind of sort out the noise. The prophets and people have been doing that. They face this challenge with story, with riddles, with kind of provocative ideas that caused you to kind of rethink. Think about Nathan's genius. I just love that story because here's Nathan. You know, it's hard to call anybody out anyway. Just your friends, it's hard to call them out, right? Imagine calling a king out who can have you killed, right? Just like this. So Nathan's going up to David in this moment. And the prophet's task is to get him to see something differently. And so he could just come straight up and be like, dude, you screwed up, right? But what does he do? He tells him this crazy story. This crazy story that pulls David in. David can't stay on the sidelines of the story. He's in it, right? You can see it in his response. He's like, have the guy lynched, is how David responds. And then Nathan's got him. Because all of a sudden, that message is inside and he flips it. You're that man. You took that sheep. You killed that sheep. Now he's ready to hear. David then repents of what he's done. He can live differently now. Before, he was guarded. He was up. He was refusing to see. That's what the prophets do. They tell these stories to try to get past our defenses. Because when we're honest, we often come to each other and to God, and we actually aren't open. Tell me what I want to hear. Tell me what I want to see. Don't tell me what you want me to see. But this is what we come to when we come to the parables. We have this invitation to listen again to the story of Jesus. To listen to his stories and say, let them shape me. I think that's kind of the prophetic task, what Jesus is bringing to us in these stories. So, why did Jesus tell stories? I think Jesus was engaging in that long-standing Jewish tradition of telling stories to shape the people, to become more like the people God hopes we will be, more true to wholeness and shalom. Now, just a quick aside about what a parable is. So that's my hope, my take on why. What is a parable? It's a pretty crazy question, actually. And if you want to read about it, it gets even crazier. So in terms of studies about the words, like around what parables have been used for, I mainly read articles that talked about the Jewish tradition, because there's a whole lot of Greek tradition about storytelling as well. But the Hebrews, like, they use them, the word is marshal. It's pretty close to marshal, just missing the R, I think. And they use it in lots of different ways. Taunts, riddles, proverbs, allegories, stories, they all kind of get this language, right? Because in Hebrew, usually one word carries a lot of weight. And so parables have lots of different ways that they're used, metaphors, similes. Like, you can think of even Jesus' stories, right? You get the kingdom of God is like kind of parables. And then you go, there once was a man who had two sons, and it's a whole narrative, right? We get all this kind of variety, and they all get subclassed as parables. Generally, though, what we'll be looking at the narrative side. Just an aside about what a parable isn't. I don't really think this is a struggle for people in the room, but I know that in my history, this is often can be a struggle. It's not something that's like a message to be decoded, right? It's not like everything in the parable has some sort of hidden meaning, which is often what we mean by allegory. Like, Revelation, the book of Revelation is often treated like this, right? There's some secret meaning to everything. But take the story we just read. Like, the sheep and the wealthy neighbor, that's pretty much all you needed. Like, you know, we got David, we got Uriah and Bathsheba, or we got David and Bathsheba. That's all we need. We don't need to know who the traveler is. That doesn't need to have meaning. We don't need to, like, try to find some significance there. And Christians have been guilty over the centuries of reading into all this and trying to make some crazy thing out of it, And I think Wendell Berry, somebody said you need to know the limits to your metaphor. So one of the things parables aren't, generally, they're not like some sort of crazy message to be decoded, although there's plenty of moments of allegory. I'm not trying to say that that doesn't happen, but I'm trying to say that there isn't some like one secret meaning. And the reason that that's not true generally is because parables were spoken orally, right? They're just spoken stories. Man, you have to be taking some serious notes to kind of like track all the hidden message of Jesus and like get out your sweet decoder ring and things to figure it out. So like generally when we read a parable, it's a story with intent. It's a story that intent is to shape us. But that means it could have several meanings. It can have different ways it impacts you. We spent 3 months looking at the parable of the prodigal son, right? And there's so many different angles you can take on it. So as you come to the parables, the stance is to be open and see what it might, how it might impact you. And we'll work to try to find the meaning in them, but also be open to wider meaning, to not just kind of boil it down to one. Just as an aside, this was a quote that I wanted to share because I thought it was pretty crazy. One author I read said, the parable is essentially a sword that stabs men's minds awake. This is initially why I wanted to call this series Weapons of Wonder. I felt the need to share this with you because often parables are things of controversy. And so what you'll see is like Jesus is asked a question, right, by somebody who's trying to set a trap for him. And like you get a response with a parable, with a story. And you find that like there's complete reframing happens. It's not a destructive, Jesus isn't trying to hurt anybody. It's that kind of prophetic wake people up. Stab men's minds awake is kind of a weird mixing metaphors. You shouldn't really stab people to wake them up. It's kind of frowned upon. So what do we do? How do we engage the parables? This is kind of like my long rant about parables. One of the main things I would say is parables aren't trying to just give you information. It's not theology like, it's not just some sort of theological message that you should just decipher and then throw the parable away. There's something to be experienced. Like you put on an album. Like you listen to your favorite TED Talk. Like you read a book. Experience it. Because then it's an art form that its power is in the experience of the parable. And part of what we need to do is learn how to experience it the way that the first people would have, the original audience would have heard it. But it is to be experienced. A provocative author in Christianity, he says this, a parable does not primarily provide us with information about our world. Rather, if we allow it to do its work within us, it will change our world, breaking it open to ever new possibilities by refusing to be held by the categories that currently exist within the world. So that's just, to me, just kind of this invitation to wrestle with parables, to kind of engage with them and treat them, to give them the same sort of respect we do to the other art that we so prize and let fill our heads and our minds. So here's some real, like, my humble tips of how I've done this in the past and how I'm encouraging people to get into the parables as we go. So what are some ways that you can engage the parables to try to connect with God and find some truth and meaning in the experience of them? I think the first step, I would say, is as you listen to the parables that we go, just notice how you react. Because parables will stir something up in you. They just got something to them. There's a bit of bite in them. And what happens is you'll have a reaction. Now, your reaction's important. Because it's going to show us something about what your perspective is. You might not be reacting in the way that Jesus was kind of intending the reaction to be. So the important thing, though, is to note it. Note your bias. Because you're going to take that baggage with you into the parable, and it's good for you to be aware of it. In fact, I would read a parable in the morning and just wrestle with it for a day before I would touch anything else, any commentaries, just to understand where am I at. The parable and you, just kind of have that kind of initial experience and acknowledge where you are. What surprised you? What disturbed you? What encouraged you? What questions came up for you? To just acknowledge that, to start there. Because the next step's going to be to listen through their ears. And that's when you're going to need some help. That's actually what the mission of the storytellers is during this series. We're going to try to provide you a bit of context for what kind of modern thought of the time, right? How people would have reacted to it? What would have surprised them? What would have disturbed them? So this is just, we're in the age of Google. Like you can Google a lot of that commentaries, get a little bit of insight as you engage. So after you've wrestled and acknowledged your baggage, you can then listen through their ears. And then once you've listened in their ears, I think it's really amazing and powerful to listen to the stories in the context of the Gospels. So the next mode that I do is like as I read it a third time, on a third day, generally for me, would be to then like ask, how does this connect to Jesus' message? What else is happening in the Gospel account? What happened before it? What happened after it? There's also a special rule for parables. It's called the rule of end stress. I don't know why they labeled it that. Essentially, the last line of a parable has a lot of power to how you interpret the parable. Like, think about the one we read this evening, whatever time it is. If we don't have Nathan say, "You're that man," that parable's weird, right? I mean, what will you do with it? You just say, that's an interesting story. Thanks for sharing. You just send him on the way, right? The end of that encounter frames the whole story. And that's common in parables, that there's significance at the end. That's not always the case. Like, you got like the yeast and like the treasure hidden in the field. Like those ones they're real short, so it's kind of hard to have like an end stress moment. But as a general rule, sort of pay attention to the end. And then connect that story with the context of the gospel, like Jesus' life, Jesus' words. What else does this come up with? How else can you see that teaching come out? This is kind of a general rule of studying scripture, right? Nothing too exciting there, but it's useful because parables can be tricky. And so you just need to ask yourself, how does this connect? Where in the Sermon on the Mount can I find it? Where in the Old Testament can I find anything that connects to that? Jesus is really famous for bringing those images from the Old Testament and sharing them again fresh. And then the last is to listen for change. The parables are an invitation, right? A story that can shape us. What would it look like to live in light of that story for you? Where does it meet you? What does it ask of you? It may not ask like a big thing. It might be a small thing. But the last mode is just to be open now, again, in light of that whole journey you went through with the parable, starting with yourself, to going to them, to then connecting it to Jesus' wider journey. What does this mean for us? I think there's something here for me in terms of like a mission of the church, because the role of the prophet has largely been kind of lost in a lot of our Christian circles. And the prophets, I think when I first started learning about them, like I used to think they were just obsessed with just how people were in relation to God. And I think that there's truth to that. But I think there's also this kind of misconception that they're all about like, the prophetic kind of afterlife sort of stuff. Prophets are obsessed with how we live now. They're how we live now in relation to God and to each other. And I think the church needs to rediscover, one, how we open ourselves to Jesus the prophet. And we're all talking about Jesus the Savior, right? Because that's great, because it's sort of us forever, and that makes us feel good. And then we challenge to have Jesus the prophet who speaks of how we live now, what we do now, and then how Jesus models how you be a prophet into society. How do we step in to join Jesus in his prophetic way of engaging it to the wider world of the ways in which it's not quite living true to the kingdom of God? And I think there's a lot of invitation there, at least for me. It excites me. It excites me, one, because this is Jesus' art form. I think it's beautiful when you actually see Jesus in the element, telling stories, encountering people, and giving them something that will shape and change them. And so our mission now, I think, as we go as a community forward, is to just open ourselves up to that. To let ourselves be willing to have that encounter, to experience that moment. To engage again with Jesus as a prophet, knowing that his message is there to shape. And then ask ourselves as we go, how might we live in light of this? So that's kind of what's been challenging me. And I wrap all this up with wrestling, because when I started this talk, I was talking about how that frustrating encounter with that riddle burned and kind of like let it stick in my mind. I just think that's a key ingredient for engaging with the parable. Wrestle with it. Talk to people about it. Let it annoy you. Because that's what's really going to change. The story of where Israel got its name always sticks to me, and I'll just leave you with that. that Jacob had this encounter with this guy who was outside his tent, and they wrestled all night for some reason. This thing's weird to me, right? I was like, what the heck? You just wrestled this random person. And at the end of that wrestling, there was a blessing. And they changed Jacob's name from Jacob to Israel. This community, like, blessed by wrestling with God. And it's so in, like, the Jewish ethos. Keep wrestling with God. Don't just kind of, like, sit back on the outsides. Get amongst the doubt, the dirt, all of that. Get amongst it. Because God will meet you there, and there's blessing there. That's where God and us, I think, connect often. So that's why we're trying to wrestle with wonder for the next, that's my plug, for the next few weeks. So the next parable up, I've actually made some bookmarks. Lace actually made them for us. Some bookmarks in the back, which please take one for your Bible. And what it's got on it is, it's got those four steps that I just talked about. Listening to yourself, listening to through their eyes, context, and for change. And then it's got a list of all the parables that we're going to be going through with their Bible reference. So you should be able to see that. We're going to do godly play on the parable of the mustard seed next Sunday. So this week, if you want to take some time out just to read the parable of the mustard seed, it's short. So phase you in there. Don't get too overwhelmed at the beginning. And yeah, that should be a good way to kick it off. So tonight, what I wanted to do, just to get you kind of going, is in groups of a couple people, I'll give you a few minutes just to talk about what you think it might look like to listen to Jesus as a prophet, and how you might engage with the parables. So if that first question is just too strange, just talk about how you might engage with them. How have you engaged with them? What's your experience been? So I'll just give you a few minutes to do that, and then we'll pull back as a group.